animal. Talking animal.
Or today, this is a cat, really, I think is more a proper thing to say. But either way, good morning. This is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Dara Eckhart, CEO of Friends of Strays. St. Petersburg's oldest no-kill animal shelter, Friends of Strays, is undergoing a significant transformation, which I'll, of course, discuss with Dara today. Most immediately, there are plans to open a new adoption center strictly for cats on July 1st. That's coming up quickly. That's Monday. This new building, painted a striking bright green and named the Cat Box, is located a block from the current Friends of Strays facility. The Friends of Strays adoptable dogs will continue to reside at the existing shelter. For those who might be thinking, hey, in the interest of equal treatment, shouldn't the dogs receive a new adoption center? Well, Friends of Strays is way ahead of you, and there are plans in place for just such a canine-centric facility. The second phase of a three-phase project that we'll again be discussing with Dara presently. In our conversation today, we'll likely also hear the details of this master plan, key elements of the Friends of Strays' 45-year history and evolution that led to these momentous developments, what's involved with the funding of this project, and more, including your questions and comments by phone or email when I speak with Dara Eckhart in a moment here on Talking Animals on WNF. A quick thank you to Colleen McGar for a gracious management/production assistance in today's show. Meanwhile, coming up later in today's program, in celebration of Friends of Strays' new adoption center, the Cat Box, I'll be presenting a special extended edition of the Comedy Corner, Todd Barry's recent appearance on The Tonight Show, in which he performed all cat material. We'll hear that wonderful feline-centric piece a bit later in today's show. Right now, though, let's discuss Friends of Strays with Dara Eckhart, alongside some monumental changes the shelter is implementing, including the one that we're talking about more immediately that's all cat-related, and that's coming up as soon as this Monday, July 1st. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Dara Eckhart to Talking Animals in person for the first time on WMNF. Yay, Dara,
yay.
How's it going?
I'm good, how are you?
So happy to have you in studio and face-to-face, and we've never met, although we've talked, obviously, a few times over the years, so it's great to have actual eye contact and regular conversation, considering there's microphones and headphones, as regular as that conversation can be.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
That's great. So we do obviously have a significant new development to discuss, part of that transformation that I alluded to that Friends of Strays is undergoing. But before we delve into those things, exciting as all that is, I'd like to first explore the considerable history and evolution of Friends of Strays, which should provide us some important context and appreciation, I think, for the momentous things that we'll be discussing a bit later. Some people may not be aware that Friends of Strays has been around a lot longer than many other shelters or other animal organizations in the Tampa Bay area. A bit over 45 years, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, this September will be 46 years.
Wow. Might be helpful for you to start by giving us a brief overview. From your standpoint, can you describe kind of Friends of Strays, but especially, even though obviously you weren't here then, what the circumstances were under which it was established some 46 years ago?
Absolutely. So our founder, Jean Bomonti, and her friends started this shelter basically out of their homes. They used to go around the city of St. Petersburg and pick up stray cats because at the time there was dog control, but there wasn't anything for cats in the community. So they would pick up stray cats and bring them back to their home and nurse them back to health if needed and get them ready for adoption. And then right around the 1979, they decided to really make this a real organization. And so they incorporated as a nonprofit as the first no-kill shelter in St. Petersburg. In the early 80s, we were actually gifted with the building that we're currently in, which has been our shelter since then. And we've grown out of it significantly I've been here. Yeah. But Jean Bomonti was absolutely one of the first no-kill pioneers out there. She firmly believed that, any cat that came into the shelter, we were going to find a place for that cat and we were going to have a good outcome for that animal.
That's great. So you can't beat that attitude.
Yeah,
right?
We follow that mission today still.
That's great. So even though you clearly obviously came later, so you're not in a position to personally witness some of the important early evolutions, like when they became a nonprofit, et cetera. What do you understand are the biggest challenges and triumphs that Friends of Australia has experienced before you arrived and sort of took over leadership?
We've got a really strong timeline on our website that shows, all of the major happenings in the history of our organization. But, one of the things is in 2000, we got dog kennels. So it became not only just a cat shelter, but we welcomed dogs into the organization as well and tried to get them homes.
Was there any resistance to that just because it had been so cat oriented for so long, or was everybody open?
Not that I'm aware of. I think everybody, understands that dogs need help as well.
Sure.
Especially in Florida and in this county.
Yeah.
We're very proud to be able to expand our dog programming as well. We've got, we started a foster program in, 2020. Right around 2020, we started a dog foster program, or just a foster program for cats and dogs. And we've really been growing that program over the last couple of years. We've got a number of great fosters that work with bottle baby kittens, kittens that come in that aren't quite ready for surgery and adoption, and mom and babies and puppies and dogs that maybe don't get along well in the shelter and need a break. Maybe they've been there for a long time. So we've really grown our foster program. And then we just added a new intake manager a couple of years ago. So that really helps us kind of organize the intakes that come in. And we've built relationships with, I think, 26 other shelters in the state of Florida. So we really work with them to make sure that when they get to a point where they have to make choices to euthanize animals, we're pulling them so they don't have to go through that process.
So you're making those other shelters at least partially no-kill in the same way that that's long been your status from the inception.
Absolutely. That's our goal. There's, Florida is in the bottom five in the United States for life-saving rates. And so we're really focusing on shelters in Florida.
Yeah.
First of all, in our own community, we work very closely with Pinellas County Animal Services, and we're their number one transfer provider. And then we also focus on the state of Florida and try to lift up some of these other organizations that are struggling right now.
So when you talk about an intake manager, so apart from those organizations, fellow organizations that you just described, what other ways do cats or dogs typically come to Friends of Australia?
We have started taking owner surrenders a couple of years ago, but we really have to balance that with the needs of these other partner shelters that we're working with.
That's got to be a weird calculus kind of, right?
It really is. We've got a really strong intake manager right now that knows how to make that work and make those numbers work. Mostly cats come in from the community. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of stray cats. We actually have two programs right now that deal with community cats. One of them is a self-trapping, and one of them is assisted trapping. So basically,
can you talk more about the difference there? Because it's hard to know what a self-trapping cat is.
Absolutely.
I'm going to lure myself into the box, and then I'm going to lower the thing. So I'd be very curious to see how that actually works.
So there's about a million cats and stray cats in Pinellas County right now.
Wow.
So what we're trying to do is stop the reproduction of these cats. So we've got two ways to bring cats into the program. So people can come in and rent a trap from us. They can get two traps at a time, and if you have maybe one or two cats in your neighborhood, you can actually set up the trap, put food in it, the cat will eventually come into it, and then you bring the cat into us and we do their spay and neuter surgery, vaccinate them and ear tip them, so that's a visual cue that they've already been taken care of.
Right.
So they're not going to reproduce.
Doesn't grab them or trap them again because it's like, hey, they've already been spayed or neutered, as case may be. So
exactly,
you need to grab this cat as well.
Exactly. And then almost 2 years ago, we took over a Meow Now, which was a independent nonprofit organization that did trap, neuter, vaccinate, and return.
Yeah.
And this is more of the assisted trapping. So when people have a colony of cats, so you've got a caretaker that's taking care of a 10, 12 cats or so, we can go in and set the traps for them and manage that whole process and then bring the entire group out. We want to make sure that we get the entire colony spayed and neutered.
Yeah, because looking after a colony, would seem to me would be like just relentless, depending on how many people are tending to that colony, just because there's more cats until they get trapped and neutered, and then they're typically taken back to that colony at that point, right?
Absolutely. We take them back to where they came from, and then so basically, you know, there's a lot of people out there that say that this doesn't work and that you should just euthanize these cats to keep them from spay and neutering, and that's not the answer. We've seen all over the country, many communities have adopted trap, neuter, vaccinate, return policies and procedures, and we're seeing much more of a reduction in the number of stray cats through that than you would with any euthanasia, because when you euthanize a cat that's in a colony, that just opens up a window for another cat to come
in
and replace
it. Isn't that just like a void that gets filled by another cat?
Absolutely.
That wanders in from somewhere else, but just kind of steps into that cat's place?
Absolutely. So you're never getting ahead of the problem.
But if you are spaying and neutering them, then you are, because they're not reproducing. So eventually that colony, typically, I guess, over a period of time would dwindle in its population, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that does solve the problem, or at least it helps mitigate it.
It definitely helps mitigate it, yeah. I mean, it's difficult to get ahead of a problem with a million cats in a community.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there's other TNVR programs in Pinellas County as well. We all work together to help kind of stem the reproduction of outdoor cats.
And we've talked about this kind of thing many times over many years on the show, but just so we're clear for anybody listening who's concerned, can you describe just briefly the traps? Because it's not, somebody might be picturing something more, you know, nefarious than they should be.
They're definitely humane traps. So it's a long, probably about a 2.5 foot long trap, and it's rectangle shaped.
Yeah.
And you put food and water in there, and the cats are attracted to the food. Before you do the trapping, you stop feeding them for about a day or so, and then they're hungry. And so then they're really attracted to that food in the trap. They go in, and as soon as they go in, it trips the little door that keeps them in there, and then they're safe. We put a cover over them to make sure that, you know, it keeps them less stressed and keeps them a little bit more calm. And then they're brought into the shelter, and they're taken very good care of while they're in the shelter.
That's a pretty good system that's been used for quite some time.
Absolutely.
All right, looks like we might have a caller. Let's see if we can get them involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Derek Eckhart.
Howdy.
Hi.
This is Bill in Largo.
Hi, Bill.
And, you know, these cats are responsible for killing literally millions of birds. And according to the Audubon Society and National Geographic, the cat is the single most destructive thing to birds. And, buddy, I take care of them. I'll go into my neighborhood when I first moved in. You wouldn't hear a sound. A few little tweets here and there. But, man, it had its cats. Well, there ain't no cats no more. And the air is full of bird song, which the birds, you know, good God, cats. Anyway, that's how I handle it. And
okay.
That's what they should do.
All right. Well, we always try to represent that point of view. Almost inevitably comes up in a conversation like this. So, Bill, want to give you your...
more birds than any other thing out there, except for starlings, but that's not very practical to get the starlings, because you can't kill a bird without killing another bird. But you can sure wipe out a bunch of cats. And for every cat you get, you saved about 1,000 birds if it's a feral cat. They just kill things. They don't even eat them. They just like to kill things and move. It's their nature. Anyway...
All right. Well, I hope you feel like your viewpoint's been represented here. So thank you. Thank you for your call, Bill.
You're welcome. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. So what might you have to say to Bill? And believe me, I know there's a bunch of Bills out there, just because we always get a question, a call, or an email, or a text from one or more Bills when we ever have this conversation.
Yeah. So. I definitely understand that perspective, but I think at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. We want less cats in the community.
Yeah.
And the only way to get there really is to do the TNVR. As I just explained, you know, when you euthanize cats, you're just opening the door for more cats to come in, and you never get on top of the problem. So really the only way forward is with targeted trap, neuter, and vaccinate.
All right. Well, in case you just tuned in, let me let you know, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Schuss, And my guest is Dara Eckhart, CEO of Friends of Strays Animal Shelter. That's the St. Petersburg oldest no-kill animal shelter. It was established actually way back in 1978. And now undergoing a significant transformation. The first phase that that we're here partly to talk about, we'll talk about some of the other phases as well, is they're opening a new adoption center strictly for cats called the Cat Box. And that's coming up officially on Monday, July 1st. So if you have any questions for Dara, we'd like to offer a comment. For example, if you've ever adopted an animal from Friends of Strays or volunteered there or anything else you might like to say, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So when exactly did you arrive at Friends of Strays?
So I've been here for about 7.5 years now.
Okay. And were you given a particular mandate when you did arrive saying, hey, here's what we want our leader to do or work on or implement?
So not so much. When I first started, there really hadn't been a strong leadership in place. At the time, if you'll ask our board president, Mo Epley, she started as the board president a couple of years before I started. And there really wasn't any organization. There was no fundraising at all. And they weren't really being run as a business. So what my duty was really was to turn this into a business and make sure that we run it, we ran it appropriately, that we made sure that we're getting animals adopted and they're not just staying in the shelter for years at a time. And just to grow the organization. What my goal was to, whenever you think of adopting an animal in St. Petersburg, you think of Friends of Strays first. And I think we're pretty close to that goal right now.
Sounds like it. Yeah. But that turning it into a business, excuse me. I'm so sorry about this. I don't know why I got a little frog in my throat here. Great, great, great thing for a radio person. Anyway, but one of the things that I've kind of unexpectedly become interested in over the 20-plus years I've been hosting the show is leadership of animal organizations, because to me, it really, I mean, it seems self-evident, but it really makes a big difference what kind of leadership there is. So you already kind of alluded to, there wasn't really much discernible leadership before you arrived.
Correct.
And a lot of organizations you can really see or trace, like if they have strong leadership, if they have like a business model of some kind, if there's kind of a little bit more laissez-faire approach, and what the outcome is for that rescue, that animal welfare thing, that organization, whatever it is, animal organization. So to me, it's really interesting. There's often in some of these organizations, there's turbulence or there's financial problems or crises. Sometimes those are crises of confidence in the leadership, which I don't know if that's wouldn't be quite what you described, but it sounds like they were really feeling like we need an actual leader that has a background that can implement these things here to bring Friends of Strays to the next level, given how many years we've been doing what we've been doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, to be honest, I didn't have a background in animal welfare when I took on this job.
So you were a business person?
I worked at Indiana University, and I was the administrative director for a couple of cybersecurity centers.
Oh, wow.
Moved down here with my husband and really wanted to get into a leadership role in a nonprofit organization. And when this came up, it just felt right to me. I've always been an animal lover. When we lived in Indiana, people would dump their dogs and cats out in the country, and we'd take them all and you know, nurse them back to health and do what we could for them. So animals have always been just part of my heart.
Yeah.
And with my business background, it seemed like a good fit, and the board took a chance on me without having that animal welfare background. But
yeah,
I think it's been a good fit. I think everybody would.
Clearly, you're still here for one thing. Look at all the things that we're talking about today and we've already alluded to so far. So those suggest that it's going really, really well.
Yeah.
And also, again, back to some of the, mostly my interest is kind of anecdotal. It's not like I've done actual, you know, like a PhD on leadership of animal organizations. But it does seem like often the situation you described of your own is almost more successful if they, I mean, obviously if people have a background in animal welfare, rescue, whatever, and they're going to lead an organization that does those things, that's obviously typically a plus. But sometimes it's almost better if they have some other strong background like yours,
mm-hmm.
just because sometimes then you're looking at with super fresh eyes about how things work and how things don't work, and sometimes even just being kind of a harsh critic of the budget. And not influenced strictly by, well, there's this many cats. And, you know, obviously we want to help the cats. But, I mean, we also have to really look at, is this a business that's sustainable?
Absolutely.
And you don't get that sometimes. And sometimes you really do. And sometimes you do with people that have a business background, but not so much an animal welfare or rescue background.
Absolutely, yeah. It was, even one little thing that I noticed first thing was we had never gone through any sort of financial audit.
Wow.
And in 40-some years. So the first thing we did was set up a financial review so that we could be prepared for an audit the next year. And we've been doing audited financials every year since then. So it's really important for me to be very transparent about what our organization is doing and where the money's coming from, where it's going.
And also, once you started doing that, it probably gives you benchmarks, right, for like between now and the next audit, we want to do A, B, and C if we can, and D, E, and F. If we get lucky,
yeah.
Go this way. And is that kind of how you approach those audits subsequently?
Yeah, pretty much. We really look strategically every year at the budget and what we can do. If we can add staff to increase programming and increase our impact on the community. And what we can do to make sure that we have enough money to cover all of the, injuries and surgeries and things that we have to do for animals that aren't just the typical, they come in and get spayed and neutered and go on the adoption floor.
Yeah. So with that kind of awareness and having spent 7.5 years here, what would you say you'd consider the most important traits of someone leading an animal rescue organization or shelter like Friends of Strays? What are the kind of the key attributes, if you had to name a handful or
well,
three?
You really have to be passionate about animals, first of all. Let me see here. You have to be open to listening to other people. I have had the wonderful opportunity to be friends and have a mentorship relationship with Denise Deisler at Jacksonville Humane Society. Mm. And she was one of the first people that I met when I first started working at Friends of Strays. And she's really helped me understand, what animal welfare is and, how do we save more animals and how do we have a better impact on our community? So I think it's really important that any leader is open to networking and getting to know people in their field and really talking about where animal welfare is going at this point, because
yeah.
We all want to do better.
And it sounds like this Denise was a perfect example of someone who was looking to help or provide some mentorship for someone who was coming into position with, background of and skills, but not necessarily directly in running a shelter.
Definitely.
So it sounds like that made a big difference as far as kind of navigating those initial year or two probably.
Yeah, she absolutely did help me through the first couple of years and beyond. I mean, she every day, I think of something and I'm like, well, what would Denise do?
Yeah. So, well, with that in mind, now that you are 7.5, almost 8, let's say better part of 8 years in, how would you say your leadership style or the way you do guide Friends of Strays has shifted over those years? I mean, there's probably things you've incorporated and things that you probably do somewhat differently, some things you do quite differently than when you began.
When I first started, again, we didn't have any sort of fundraising program at all. So just in the last 2 years, we've had a director of development. And so we've really focused on engaging with donors and engaging with potential supporters and friends. That's been one of the biggest things that's been able to put us on the right track for the future and put us in the place where we could do these expansions. So investing in staff and of course investing in real estate to make sure that we could expand, because it was very clear from the very beginning that we didn't have enough space for what I wanted to do with the organization. It's just been really about growth all the way around.
Yeah.
Being open, listening to my staff, listening to our leadership team and our managers, and understanding what the needs are of the organization and working towards meeting those goals for everyone.
Isn't it interesting from where you sit now to be looking back a little bit that there wasn't really much in the way of fundraising when that's in ways so pivotal in so many ways, including some of the things that we're inching ever closer to talking about today. But it just seems like it's hard to imagine. Like, I guess sometimes people that are running these things or just trying to like participate in them, they're just going from jumping from one thing to the next and just trying to stay ahead of whatever crisis is today's crisis.
Absolutely.
So the idea of taking a step back and saying, okay, well, how can we fundraise? How can we support this effort? Or how can we have development or a director of development? those things, you only get to those things once you've kind of plugged some dikes and...
Absolutely. So, you know, my first year, I was really fortunate that, or we were really fortunate that we got about $1 million in bequests. Wow. So when people pass away, they leave money to the organization. And most of these donors were really affiliated with Gene Bomonti. So we had a number of bequests that came in very early on in my career at Friends of Strays. And we were able to use those strategically to kind of remodel the current shelter to make it more welcoming and make it a better place for cats. Mm. And then we started seeing people coming into the shelter and noticing that it's so clean and it's so, you know, it doesn't smell like a shelter. Yeah. And you can really tell that you're taking care of the cats. And then that was really about building, you know, community consensus that we're on the right track here.
Yeah.
So we were so fortunate that we had that money to be able to invest at the beginning and get us through a couple of years while we were getting our ducks in a row to really become the shelter that we wanted to be.
Yeah. And so was there a major philanthropic gift that's kind of connected to the Friends of Strays transformation that we kind of have touched on but haven't really delved into yet, which we will, though, I promise.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Margie and Phil Schwartz used to volunteer for the shelter long before I started. Their son, Carl, volunteered, and he was just a wonderful person. We enjoyed every minute with him. And he passed away, sadly, a couple of years ago. But Margie and Phil set up a trust that when he passed, half of the trust would come to us, and we got about $2.2 million from that trust.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we were able to purchase two buildings that are going to allow us to expand our dog and cat adoptions. So we're creating the Schwartz Family Camp Adoption Campus at this point.
All right. Well, I think we're at the time where we got to start talking about stuff. But let me just, just for people who might have tuned in a bit late, just say this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Dara Eckhart, CEO of Friends of Strays Animal Shelter. And we're going to be just about to talk about a new adoption center that they're opening just days away officially, strictly for cats. And then that'll be followed as well. Also, if we talk about one that's earmarked just for dogs. So we invite you to join the conversation with any thoughts or questions about Friends of Strays or comments or experiences you've had with them by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. All right, so with all this wind-up, I mean, I'd like to think it's valuable wind-up, but it's still wind-up nonetheless. I think we're ready to talk about the new cat adoption center, the Cat Box. So the grand opening is Monday, but from what I gather, their cat's already in there and already enjoying the place.
We moved cats in yesterday, and it was the most wonderful thing I've ever seen. We've been working on this project for almost 4 years, and to have cats in the building finally was just such a joy for everyone yesterday.
How many cats are there so far in this preliminary days?
We've got about probably 30 adult cats. And
already in there now?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're not just inching in.
We're diving them all in
like a cat.
Yeah. Okay. And then we've got two kitten rooms. There was one yesterday. I walked in, and I don't know, there must have been 9 kittens in that room, and they all came and attacked me and were just wanting love, and it was just the most amazing thing.
Talk about how the Cat Box came together. I'm guessing it's been a bit of a long and winding road to get to yesterday, where kittens are jumping at you, which is a good problem to have, obviously.
Yeah. So we purchased these two buildings at the end of 2020. So we actually moved in. We were waiting to get, you know, architecture in place and get permitting and contract with the contractors. And it took, you know, almost 4 years to really get to this point. So construction is a long and drawn out process. And trying to find the right fit for the rooms and how all of the rooms are going to work together. We've also got our administrative offices in that building. And we added a community event space in that building as well.
Wow.
So it's really a multifunctional building. But our number one goal was really to make a good space for cats. So any cat that comes into our program has the space that it needs to feel comfortable until it gets adopted. And I really think that we've gotten to that point with this new building.
And we're not physically there, but I mean, I know we are there in terms of like cats being there and 30 cats already hanging out in advance of the official opening Monday. But Can you give me a bit of a guided tour? I mean, sounds like we have a room devoted to kittens.
Yes.
And there's a room, at least one room for cats. But is there cats running loose and cats kind of not running as loose? Or how does that work?
So we have 5 adult cat rooms.
Oh, wow.
Three of them are free roaming rooms. So no cage banks at all.
Yeah.
We've got 2 rooms that have cage banks. And these are for cats that, you know, don't necessarily get along with other cats. Or they're a little bit stressed and they need a little place to call their own.
Mm-hmm.
Even those cats, though, they get out during the day. We have play groups for cats. So we know who gets along with whom.
Right.
And everybody gets out of their cage banks during the day, so they have time to roam around and enjoy their new space.
That's awesome.
And then we have 2 kitten rooms. One is a free roaming kitten room, and one has cage banks.
Same idea. Even kittens sometimes are a bit shaky about being amongst others.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or even amongst humans that might walk into that room and spook them in some way.
For sure.
A fellow kitten maybe not feel the same way.
Yeah. And then we have 2 special rooms. We used to call them almost home rooms, but now we're calling them Airbnbs.
Okay.
And these are
single
rooms for cats that clearly just do not get along with other cats. They might have come from a situation where maybe their owner passed away and they're not, you know, used to being in a shelter environment at all, and it's stressing them out. So this gives them a really nice, safe, calm space to be and get the one-on-one attention that they need to thrive.
That's great. Well, we got a couple of emails I want to quickly read. One says, thank you for the show. Thank you for caring about animals who cannot speak for themselves. I think we humans are here on Earth to take care of each other and all living things. That's from Jackie in Clearwater. And the other one says, my name is Red. I was rescued 7 years ago. There's a picture of this that I obviously can't present on the airwaves. But rescued 7 years ago. We love you. Don't be safe on your travels. Be safe and most of all, peace. So that's from Bert. So thanks for your nice note there. And so let's talk a little bit more about the cat room there, cat box. First of all, do you want to describe the exterior a little bit, just because I think that's a kind of a key element?
Yeah,
as much as it's great inside and the cats have different places to go, that's awesome. But just before you even get there, you have to walk through like something pretty spectacular.
Yeah, so we wanted this to be a really fun presence in the community and in our neighborhood. And you cannot miss this building driving by. It's bright green. It's the green of our logo colors. So bright green exterior on the front, and then we have a cat-shaped awning on the front of the building.
So
it's like a half circle with cat ears on it, and it's just the most adorable thing I've ever seen.
Very cool.
And then on the side of the building, we've got a beautiful mural that actually one of our board members' daughters, Ashley McKinney, designed and painted with her high school class a couple of years ago. So we really want to, you know, make it funky like St. Pete, because we've always been a little on the funkier side of things.
Sure.
So we've got great artwork inside and just really great spaces for the cats. One of the things that I was really excited about was we put huge windows in each of the cat rooms.
Mm.
And eventually we're going to have a butterfly garden outside each window so that the cats can kind of interact or at least see something and get some more enrichment that way. But what I saw yesterday when the cats first moved in, they loved the windows. So they didn't have any windows in the current shelter.
I've never met a cat that didn't like staring out the window at least for part of the day. So,
And we made sure that the windowsill was wide enough for a cat butt to sit on.
So they can hang there right at the window.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. So it's just such a great
everything.
Place. We did.
That's
we tried to.
Yeah. No, but just even the idea that you're actually walking through a cat at the entrance is just great from the start. Not to mention the bright green thing. It's hard to miss that building, let's just put it that way.
It really is.
As it should be, yeah. So, and I think I read somewhere, I think, where there's some kind of special offers or promotions or whatever, like as part of launching the new...
Yes, yeah. So we've got lots of opportunities to support the expansion efforts that we have. We've got room naming opportunities that start around 25,000 to 40,000.
One of the kitten rooms, let's say, if you wanted to, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. So you name that room and that helps support the money that we put into the building
right.
itself. So we've got four rooms named right now by people, which is really exciting. Yeah.
Great.
But you know, there's lots of opportunities from, you know, $25 can help us get to our goal. Our overall goal for our capital campaign is $6 million, and we've already raised right at $4
million. Wow. That's super impressive.
Yeah.
But that goes back to, again, how business and sort of business acumen is so critical in an animal organization.
For sure.
I mean, a lot of places would be hard pressed to get to that that kind of figure at any point, and just because they're not business minded in that same way.
Definitely. So. Yeah, and it's really a testament to our community that they're getting behind us and know that we're here for the animals, for sure.
So, as much as there's great bequests and some of the things like the half the trust that you mentioned that were earmarked for this, so a lot of this is just regular also fundraising, and are there any grants or anything involved in this, or is it strictly...
We do get some grants. Petco Love has been a great supporter of ours. They actually gave us a capital campaign gift of $25,000 to name a room.
Nice.
But we get grants from a lot of animal welfare organizations. Best Friends was very supportive of us to start up our return to home program, the self-trapping program that I was describing earlier. They gave us a grant of, it was about $250,000 to get that started.
That's great.
So we've just been really fortunate and grateful to all of these organizations that have been supporting our work.
Yeah, well, two things I want to say on that. One is for people who want to like check out more or maybe see where there's some opportunities to donate or help support the work of Friends of Strays, or maybe even look into getting your own name room rights. It's friendsofstrays.org is the website.
Right.
And of course, also on socials, but that's probably a good place to look for how to donate and support them financially. And also, when you're talking about Best Friends, I was going to say that Friends of Strays definitely has a national reputation, has had for some time. I mean, obviously, very highly regarded. So to me, it makes sense, for example, that Best Friends and others that are, you know, also considered major national things would be supportive and try to help when they could, just because they regard Friends of Strays and the work you guys do so highly.
Yeah, well, I really think that, and back to, you know, my friend Denise Deisler, she helped negotiate this grant with Best Friends, and Jacksonville actually kind of oversaw the grant and worked with, it was a mentorship grant. So it was to help us work with Pinellas County Animal Services, because they were euthanizing about 2,800 cats a year that would come in that instead of being returned to field after being spayed and neutered and ear tipped. So we really wanted to help Pinellas County Animal Services get to a no-kill rate. And through that mentorship program, that's exactly what we did. We got them up to about an 89% save rate.
That reminds me of a question I was going to ask anyway, and this is as good a time as any. With the new cat adoption center, do you have a projection for the increase in cat adoptions that you anticipate that this will bring to Friends of Strays?
So I don't think we're going to see a huge increase in cat adoptions. What we really wanted to accomplish with this building was to create a safe space for cats.
Okay.
So in our current building, cats and dogs are housed very closely together. And so when there's a lot of dogs and a lot of puppies in the shelter, it's very noisy and it causes a great deal of stress for the cats. So it was really important to me to have a safe, quiet, calm space for the cats.
Yeah.
We'll probably increase our adoptions a little bit, but not significantly.
Yeah. So that wasn't really sound like an objective. It was like, let's get the cats away from the dogs.
Yes.
Give the cats some peace and quiet so they can just sit on their butts on the windowsill and look out and enjoy life a little bit more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, we're going to get to the dog building here soon. And that's where we're going to see a significant increase in adoptions is with our dogs.
So let's talk about that then, because I think that's really interesting. So that's phase two, if I'm following along here, which may or may not be the case. But
that's
phase two. Phase one is the cat place. Phase two is the dog place. So when do we see the dog place being implemented, and what will that look like?
So, again, we purchased the dog house building at the end of 2020. It was under lease to a corporation called Fastenal until just this June, the end of June. Actually, tomorrow I'm going to do the final walkthrough with them. So, so we had to wait until their lease was up before we could start work on that building. But we just contracted with an architect. So we're starting the plans right we'll be starting the plans pretty soon. Hopeful to be able to get to permitting at the beginning of 2025, and then open the doghouse building in the early 2026.
Wow!
So it takes a little while to get there, but we're working towards our goal. We have a donor who has named that building. So Gene and Kevin Milkey, who are part of the Milkey Family Foundation, they also own the Grand Central Brew House in St. Petersburg.
Oh, okay.
So they have named the it's going to be the Milkey Bone Doghouse is what we're calling it. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But right now, where the dogs are, have all the cats been moved or most of the cats?
All of the adoptable cats have been moved.
Right.
So we probably have some cats there that are not quite ready for adoption. Maybe they're in isolation or what.
So there's still some overlap of dogs and cats currently.
Yeah. But there will be because, that our current shelter, once the doghouse building is open, it's going to be for intake and medical only. So there's going to be, when animals get sick in the shelter and have to go to isolation, they'll have to go back to the medical building to do their isolation. So there will be a mix of cats and dogs in there.
Right. But it's already pretty segmented compared to what it was by quite a way.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So phase three is going to be focusing on kind of boosting the medical and other kinds of treatment at the current building.
Correct.
Right? Yes. Is that right?
Yes.
So like what kind of things would be offered that aren't offered currently?
Well, we actually just had a very generous donor that gave us money to purchase an x-ray machine for the medical building. Yeah. So we're actually in the process of ordering that right now. And one of the almost homerooms that was in the current building is going to be our new x-ray facility.
That's
going to save us a ton of money because right now we have to take any of our animals that need x-rays out to other doctors.
Sure.
And it's expensive to do that.
Yeah.
So if we can do that in-house, it's going to just, amp up our ability to take care of more animals.
What kind of treatment or procedures can you currently do at Prince of Street?
We have an amazing vet, Dr. Eric Pindar. He just started in January, and he can do so many specialty surgeries like amputations.
So he's like full-time on staff?
Yeah, full-time.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Our first full-time doctor was Dr. Emerson, Katie Emerson, and she left us at the end of last year. Dr. Pindar is our second full-time vet in the history of the organization, but he's really helped us step up our medical game a little bit.
That's great.
Because he can do so many surgeries in-house that we don't have to pay for now.
That's so great. And again, we just see the value of development and putting a business plan together so that you're able to hire a vet on staff.
Absolutely.
Versus like so much of that work has to be piecemeal just because it's rare to be able to do that. So then even if they give you a break, which they typically do in these situations, you're still paying X amount of dollars each time.
Yeah. Well, when I first started, Dr. Emerson was just working there one day a week. So we, over the last 6 years, we got her, we'll get her 2 days a week, and then we'll get her three days a week. And then finally, with that grant from Best Friends, we were able to bring her on full time.
That's great. So we're in our final moments. This is Talking Animals. I'm Devin. We're in our final moments of speaking with Donna Eckhart, CEO of Friends of Strays Animal Shelter. So do you have any last-minute question or comment for Dara about Friends of Strays, all these kind of exciting new plans that they're unveiling, and any experiences you might have had there? Call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So these three phases have probably kept you super busy and occupied, whatever. But if you look out way yonder past what the likely phase three is, timetable is going to be, is there something else that's like kind of a dream scenario for Dara Eckhart, for Friends of Strays?
What I really want is Friends of Strays to just be, again, the first place that people think of to adopt an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to focus more on bringing animals in from organizations that are struggling right now. That's my big goal with this expansion.
I mean, that's so huge. And I hope that people that didn't get glossed over, because I think that's essential, because you're obviously greatly reducing some euthanasia that might have otherwise been hard to avoid. And you're just saying, hey, come to us before you do anything drastic and we'll help you.
Absolutely.
That's gigantic. So let me see. I think there might be one more call we might try to take. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dara Eckhart.
I was wondering if you had said it or not, the address for the new building is in Tampa. I'm looking online, and all I can see is the address in St. Pete.
Yeah, we don't have a facility in Tampa. It's just in St. Pete. So the new Catbox building, it's at 3015 46th Avenue North in St. Pete.
3015 46th Avenue?
Yeah.
Are you thinking of going over there?
Yeah.
Come see us.
Yeah. Look for the green building. It'd be hard to miss. Thanks for your call.
Okay. Is there a phone number for the building so I could talk to somebody about giving some kittens?
Yeah. You can call us at 727-522-6566.
Okay. And then it was, what's the address again?
3015
46th Avenue. I'll try.
You got
Thanks
it.
So much.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for your call.
I want to see that cat building.
Thank you.
I thought you were saying it was in Tampa, but...
No, it's all everything's in St. Pete that we're talking about.
St. Pete.
All
okay,
right.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, Dara, well, I think we've just kind of reached the end of our time here, but really glad you came in, and this sounds like a really exciting time. Anything else about Monday or before Monday that we should address?
So the grand opening is Monday at 10 a.m. We're going to have the St. Pete Chamber there with the ribbon cutting.
Can anybody come to that?
Anybody can come to that.
Great. That's what
I thought. Love the community to show up and just come and see what we're doing there.
Yeah, wear your cat costume.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be bright green, but it should be some kind of cat costume.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Well, Dara, well, thank you so much. Thanks for all your great work on behalf of all our dog and cat friends and your great stewardship of Friends of Strays and for joining us today on Talking Animals. So, using the Friends of Strays new cat adoption center, the Catbox, as a jumping off point, I'm about to present, in fact, a special extended edition of the Comedy Corner, namely Todd Berry's recent appearance on The Tonight Show when she performed all cat material. So here is Todd Berry with a piece called Pet Cats on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WNF.
All right. I live right here in New York City. The building I live in charges me $50 a month because I have a cat. It's a spiteful pet fee to have. I remember being in the leasing office, signing the lease. Guy's like, so it's just you in the apartment? Yeah, just me and my cat. Oh, so it's not just you in the apartment. There's also something this big living there? Yeah, she's the size of my toaster. You have a toaster? You got to come clean with me, my man. All right, I have a couple of spoons also. Okay, we'll go 50 for the cat, 30 for the toaster. $8 each for the spoons. I can make that joke last 19 hours if I want to. Trying to move into a fancy building, had to fill out this long application. They said, do you have a pet? I said, I have a cat. They said, we need to see a picture of the cat. You think I'm lying about having a cat? That's the kind of lies I tell. I have a cat. I do not have a cat. I don't know why I just said that. Maybe they're just trying to trip me up. Oh, you got me. It's really a polar bear. I was going to draw whiskers on him, hope for the best. I didn't realize you had this airtight screening process where you asked for a picture of the cat because you know how hard it would be for me to go online and find a picture of a cat. And what are you going to do when you get that picture? Oh, no, no, no. Not another calico. I'm supposed to brush my cat's teeth. That was sprung on me by my vet. You got to start brushing your teeth. I was like, okay, I wouldn't have gotten the cat. Just saying, had I known, I wouldn't have considered it for 1 second. But it's too late. I love her. So went on YouTube looking for tutorials how to brush your cat's teeth. Thought there might be one or two. There's thousands of them. All the same, none were helpful. They're like, here's how you brush your cat's teeth. First, start out with the world's most relaxed cat. You got that? No, I don't got that. Shockingly, I do not have that. Place her carefully on this table specifically designed to examine animals. You can get one at your local veterinary supply store for $6,000. Now take the toothbrush and toothpaste. I watch it. Oh, my God, she took it from my hand. She's taking the cap off the toothpaste. She's brushing her own teeth. Chris, white strips, where'd you get those, baby? They have cat cafes now. Coffee shop. They have cat cafes now. Coffee shops with cats roaming around in them. They're great. I go to these when I'm on the road. Usually there's like 20 or 30 cats at these places. I went to one in Sweden that had 6 cats. And they were proud of it. Like, we have 6 cats here. It's like if I went to a non-cat cafe and they had 6 cats there, I'd be like, oh, there's a few cats in here. I wouldn't be like, whoa, did I accidentally wander into a cat cafe? I am counting 6 whole cats. I'm 5 cats and a Mr. Coffee away from having a Swedish cat cafe. I'm just doing cat jokes tonight, by the way. It's fun being a new cat owner, it is. Get to buy our stuff. Also on Amazon, looking at cat treats. Found a brand of cat treat. There's a bunch of reviews next to it. Saw there was a 1-star review. I was like, ooh. I got to read a 1-star review of a cat treat. This was the entire review. My cat didn't like this. Guys, at his keyboard, I'm going to keep this lean and mean. My cat didn't like this. Boom, the end. I could just see that guy at home. Hey, Pockets, come here. Got some new treats for you to try. What do you think? Oh, you don't like them? Well, don't worry. Daddy will bankrupt the company. Well, just try a different brand. Don't be so petty. You don't be so polite, Pockets. I'm going to crush them. Thank you very much, folks.
That was Todd Barry from his recent appearance on The Tonight Show. With his pet piece called Pet Cats here on Talking Animals on WNF. Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the brand new show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joaquin Carter. After that, we shift back to music with Jim Bannon holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6 p.m., at which point our terrific Wednesday night block of Latin music kicks in. Just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. Next Wednesday, July 3rd, I'll be joined by Dr. Michael Maria Delgado, a certified cat behavior consultant, animal behavior scientist, and author of Play With Your Cat, The Essential Guide to Interactive Play for a Happier, Healthier Feline. Fascinating book. Glad you join us for that. Also invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. Apple Podcasts are available too, as well as podcasts on other platforms. That's all. Also links to our social media pages and other information. You can also subscribe to the Talking Animals newsletter to find out what's happening with our show a few days beforehand and other exciting news. So that's all at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks.